back to the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Friday morning. 251-343-0106 text line. We'll try to get to the remainder of the text sometime between now and the conclusion of the program. But it's that time. We do this every Friday. Time for our returning champion, State Senator Chris Elliott. I love Josephine, by the way. Senator, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Great to be with you.
Thanks for making time, as always. We do appreciate it. You've been outspoken about this, about the possibility of the expansion of Medicaid, just kind of warning people. Your predecessor there, Trip Pittman, warns about proration, but just coming out of BCA and hearing Robin Stone talk about health care, people are pointing to an effort to try to expand Medicaid. It's just the one that won't go away. Maybe it's guys like me that keep making it not go away. But what do you think of that? Do you think it's a real possibility?
I really don't. And I think that there are enough members that feel firmly about it like I do that are you know, that can stop it pretty quickly. I mean, look, Medicaid expansion would be hugely expensive to the state and could be very expensive, very, very expensive to the state in the long term, and really crash what have been, proper fiscally constrained budgets. One of the frustrating things that we've seen throughout the pandemic is large federal handouts and what they do to the state's economy and what they do to the state's workforce. If we continue to give things away for free, whether it's health care or unemployment or, whatever, the disincentive to go to work will remain high, and we will continue to have one of the lowest labor participation rates in the country. It's not just the budget cost. It's the cost to society. It's the cost to the workforce. And that's one of the reasons I remain adamantly against it. Over half of the babies born in Alabama are born into a federally subsidized CHIP program. Half. There are more people on the wagon than pulling it, and that's not right.
Well, but the talk doesn't go away. I think maybe more now than ever, there does seem to be a push from certain areas, the usual, as we used to call them, the big mules. But the hospital association's always been big on this. That do you think it means that they'll at least try, or do you think this gets squashed? It won't be like Rebuild Alabama, where you go through an entire election cycle and no one ever talks about the raising the gas tax, and then after Walt Maddox is dispatched back to Tuscaloosa, you see people start talking about raising the gas tax, and you see we gotta rebuild our infrastructure and the usual stuff that happened there. You don't think that could happen in this circumstance, but it'd be more about Medicaid.
I really don't. I mean, I understand the argument that is being made, and especially the one by the hospital. It's a monetary argument. It's a business decision for them, and it makes sense for them. But again, I am opposed to disincentivizing work. People ought to, and especially in this economy, get a job. And even better if that job provides health insurance. They ought not to be waiting on the government to give them a handout so that they don't have to get a job. That's bad for society, and it will be hugely expensive for the state of Alabama in the long term. And as Senator Pittman pointed out, could very well lead to, going back to the days of proration.
Does the legislature have to do something, though, on health care? Or is there anything the legislature could do in 2023 or beyond to bolster health care? We're told it's in disarray and there's rural hospitals closing. You wonder if hospitals equal health care. That's not necessarily the case, but is there something you guys got to do this upcoming year?
I think we need to continue to look at what we have on the books and make sure that it's working effectively. And I think we need to stop looking at hospitals as economic development activities and instead look at them as health care providers. All too often in rural parts of the state, we look at hospitals as economic development engines, and that they have to stay open so that these folks will continue to have jobs. Look, things change. Our larger metropolitan areas, you can get to fairly quickly. And, you know, when you're having major surgery or something like that, you want to be at UAB. You want to be at the University of South Alabama. You want to be at UAH. You need to go to one of those large metropolitan areas. Your basic healthcare services can be handled in large part through seeing a GP, a general practitioner, in some of these areas, get you stabilized and then get to a major economic center.
Well, you mentioned economic development. When you talk to these guys, they will tell you this, that part of economic development, quality of life equals good schools, good health care, good infrastructure, and we have to do this because if we don't, then you won't. You got to help get these guys on their feet, or they won't be able to stand.
Don't misunderstand me. I think every part of the state ought to have emergency health care services of some sort or another, whether that's a freestanding emergency room or something of the like. The question is whether or not you need a full-fledged hospital with hospital beds, with surgery facilities. And I think that the answer to that is probably no. It's very inefficient from a cost standpoint. It's very inefficient from a labor standpoint. What we need to look at is providing good emergency services in those areas. And then as often as possible, quickly as possible, get those folks transferred to a major medical center where they can receive top-notch care in a much more cost-effective way.
Isn't the problem this, though? It's not necessarily that there's something economic going on. It's just people don't – there's no customer base, right? That we're focused on health care in places where there's nobody that really is asking for health care or you know, has that issue. Because a lot of people are moving away from the rural areas, those populations are shrinking. We saw it in this last census. And if you don't have customers, then what's the point of trying to have a full functioning hospital?
Well, you're picking at a much larger problem that deals with transportation funding and economic development as a whole and everything else. The state of Alabama is going to have to change the way we look at how we fund infrastructure, whether that's healthcare infrastructure, transportation infrastructure, what have you. The dollars need to go and have to go where the people are and where the tax revenue is generated, so that we can continue to invest in those areas that are paying dividends in the form of tax revenues to the rest of the state. Obviously, I represent one of those. You look at Lee County, you look at Tuscaloosa, you look certainly at Huntsville and Madison and areas like that. We need to continue in Mobile, of course. We need to continue to invest in those areas that continue to generate revenues for the rest of the state. That's the way you grow the pie, and that's how you get the pie bigger, or the slice of the pie bigger in the more rural parts of the state. And that certainly needs to be true with transportation. It needs to be true with healthcare funding as well. The only contrast to that, I'll say, is with broadband funding. We need to get broadband into these rural areas, and that's something that has been a larger and larger part of the conversation about what we're doing. That is the way, in my mind, to help repopulate these areas is to have good broadband access. One thing the pandemic taught us is you can work from home and be successful with it. And rural Alabama is a wonderful place to live as long as you can get online. And if we fix that, I think long term we can change the trajectory of the declining populations in these areas.
Joined by State Senator Chris Elliott here on the program. How much do you think the government should be involved in there? Because it's been this has been a debate for 10, 15 years now. And is it really... Do we need to start thinking of internet access as more like utilities, access to clean drinking water, as access to power, et cetera?
That's a very good question. Philosophically, I will tell you that the government is going to be involved in this area because the federal government has dumped billions of dollars on us for infrastructure funding through the Infrastructure Investment Jobs Act and through ARPA and CARES Act money before that. I mean, billions and billions of dollars coming to the state that can be used for rural broadband expansion. And if we've got the money, then is for that purpose, then yes, we ought to use it. Would I be in favor necessarily of taking huge chunks out of the general fund in order to fund this? Probably not. But since it's there, let's use it for a one-time expense that can really change the trajectory of some of these counties in rural Alabama.
The other rural issue, I suppose, is this. The state getting into at least playing some role in water and sewer infrastructure. We already talk about Lowndes County and Perry County and Wilcox County all the time, but even some of these places, in this last round of ARPA money with Calera and Troy getting in on it, is that something you think we're going to see more of in this next round when you guys go deliberate about the second round of ARPA money?
I think we will, and you know, there'll be an update from Lance LaFleur, from the ADM director, here coming up next week when the Joint Legislative Oversight Committee meets on the ARPA money to see where this money's going so far. But it really is the same answer, Jeff, as for broadband. The feds are pushing a ton of money to the state of Alabama, and this is one of the stated purposes they want it used on. Do we have needs in these areas? Yes, absolutely. And if that money is there and it's supposed to be spent for that purpose, it, you know, it's incumbent upon the state, in my mind, to go ahead and do that. But again, to do that in a fiscally constrained way that doesn't cause or create any recurring costs to the state, but rather makes one-time investments in infrastructure that will be valuable to the state for decades to come.
Well, I guess this, though, the state getting in this realm is not something the state traditionally does. And you mentioned ADEM and Lance LaFleur, but are you confident that the state's qualified or capable of, or do you think it's just we got to leave it up to the local governments?
Well, traditionally, that type of investment would be left up to the utilities, you know, water and sewer board, and to local governments. And they've been in most of the municipalities doing a pretty good job with that. Putting those types of infrastructure investments, frankly, off on their ratepayers, where, you know, philosophically, again, I think that should be. The question is, how do you disperse the largesse from the feds quickly and with enough oversight? Lacking the oversight could be a real big problem for the state. If you have locals in charge of some of this stuff, you could end up in a situation where you have a problem with the grant that requires repayment by the Fed, and without the state oversight, that could be really disastrous for the state.
Well, I guess that remains to be seen. Other than that, when we talk about ARPA, the other thing we always, well, I hear it from some people, but I see people, your colleagues in the House and the Senate there in the legislature run from this question, but tax relief, should there be some tax relief, and should it be part of the ARPA discussion?
I don't know that it'll be part of the ARPA discussion, but it absolutely should be part of the discussion during the general session. I mean, we have seen record budgets, and we've also seen record expenses. Government, just like individuals, has seen increased costs in everything that government buys, from vehicles to asphalt and everything in between. But at the same time, these record budgets, you know, the good conservative Republicans have got to make sure that they take advantage of these surpluses and return some of it to the taxpayer. We need to be conservative about it. We need to be fiscally responsible so that we don't end up in a budget problem. But at the same time, I am convinced the government will spend absolutely every nickel you give to it. And the only way to constrain the continued growth of government is to restrain the revenue coming in. And if we can do that through targeted tax cuts, say on the grocery tax, then I think we should.
Yeah, I don't know what your experience is, but whenever you start talking about tax cuts or tax relief or whatever, the pushback, it comes from within the state, right? It comes from maybe it's a teachers union or maybe it's a state agency, that it's almost as if they already got the money spent, that they think that you got some extra here that it should go to us, and that you immediately see a pushback against tax relief.
Well, and that's the natural push and pull between bureaucrats and the legislature, the funding. I saw it when I was on the county commission. It was the same thing, and we're seeing it at the state level, too. That's how our government is set up. You just have to have the funding entity, the appropriators, with the fortitude to do the right thing, that are focused on the correct type of tax policy and are committed to making sure that excess revenues go back to the people.
Senator, we'll get you out of here on this. I know you're busy this morning, but a bridge question here for you. We had Jack Burrell on the program earlier this week talking about it. And I guess one of the unknown questions is, okay, so you go forward with this plan. What does the maintenance look like on the Wallace Tunnel and the causeway? Because that's going to be the free route. Do you think the state needs to, or whoever, ALDOT needs to make some kind of guarantee that they're not going to let that those thoroughfares fall into disrepair to make sure that that free route is still viable?
You know, that's a good question. I don't know what that agreement would look like and how enforceable anything like that would be. But I will say this, the Wallace Tunnel has been a significant investment in the state. We've seen the Bankhead Tunnel, which is certainly lived well beyond its lifespan, continue to be maintained by the State Department of Transportation. And I have absolutely no reason to believe that the State Department of Transportation would not continue to maintain the Wallace Tunnel and the Bankhead Tunnel. Those are important arteries that cannot be replaced inexpensively, much better to continue to maintain them and continue to have them as alternative routes to the new bridge. I have confidence that ALDOT will continue to maintain both of those arteries.
Well, I only asked that because of that last 2019 deal that was part of it, that they couldn't do upgrades to the free route, right? It was supposed to encourage people to take the toll road, and that's a fear, seems to be a fear from our listeners at least.
And I think it's a fair one, and I'll just say this to alleviate that. I think a lot of that was driven by the P3 concept and the profit motivation that was inherent in that delivery method. And I think that with the state now owning and operating the bridge as it should, that profit motive really is maybe not removed entirely, but certainly has dissipated significantly. And you're looking at transportation policy, not just from a profit standpoint, but from an efficacy standpoint. And I think that means you don't do anything. I mean, you continue to maintain the Wallace and Bankhead as very efficient free routes.
Senator, we'll leave it there. You've been very kind with your time, as you always are. And we'll talk again next week.
Thank you, my friend. Enjoy your weekend.
Thank you. That was State Senator Chris Elliott. Let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
The finest pickup to ever play the blues.